So let's take it from the Mishnah, around seven lines down. The Mishnah begins, the last Mishnah of this parak. Says, Beishamai says a person is allowed to take off bones and shells on Shabbos. He's not concerned with mukhs at all. He could use his hands directly to move everything off. While Beis Hillel says, Misalik is a tavla. Kula uminara, you're allowed to, you can't move them directly, but you could take the tavla. The tavla is some type of table, some type of base, which has a kli on it. Rashi says, Basil Omrim, Misalak is a tavla, Sheish Taras kli aleha, Aval lo yitalta klipam biyadaim, Kreb Yehuda. Basil holds, you cannot move the muksa items directly with your hand, that's a violation of muksa. He holds like Kreb Yehuda, who does hold the muksa, but what you can do is you can take the table or something and then shake everything off. That would be an indirect way of moving the muksa. So this is a very important machlokas between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, how he passed in legabe muksa. So the Tosfos asks a question in Maseches Beitza, how come this isn't a bait? How is it not a basis? How are you allowed to move the tabla if there are tamos, if there are klipos on top of the table? How can you move the table? Doesn't the table now become a basis? So there are a few answers that Tosfos himself brings. One of the answers is that since the intention was not to place the klipos and the tzamos on the table all Shabbos long. Basis is only when you have intention of putting the muksa item there all Shabbos long. So therefore, this case was not that way and not a problem of muksa. Others say because there were also dvar mutar mana. There was food on top of the table. So we know if something's a basis, the davar aser, and also the davar mutar, if the davar mutar is more chashiv than the davar aser, it's not a basis. That would be another explanation. Alternatively, the answer is that Tosa says that since you don't really care about the tzamos and the klipos at all, it's really not. It's only when there's money or something that's muksa that you really care about, that's value, would it really render muksa. But Tosa says that since no one cares about the klipos, no one cares about the tzamos, it would not be considered muksa. There is a fourth answer that Tosa doesn't answer, which is that it's only a basis if it was there, bein hashmashos, it was there from the beginning of Shabbos, but since this seemingly was only placed there during the suda, only came afterwards, and only became tzamos and klipos after you removed it on Shabbos, that too would not make it considered a muksa. So this is some examples. So either way, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai argue whether or not you're allowed to move muksa directly or not move muksa directly. So the Mishnah goes on to say further now that mavirin miflei hashulchan perurin pachos mikazayas. You're allowed to move off the table little breadcrumbs, even though the breadcrumbs are less than a kazayas a big, you're allowed to. Rashi explains here that this statement of the Mishnah is according to both. It's stamahu. Both Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai agree you can move bread less than a kazayas. It's not an issue. Rashi explains because we're going to see this is Michael Behema. Even though people don't eat bread that's so small, it's crumbs. We're not going to eat crumbs, but dogs and cows will lick up crumbs. So that would be considered not muksa since animals would eat them. The Mishnah says further, is Seyar Shalofanim, some type of, I don't know exactly what it is, some hairy type of thing which is not really edible for people, but apparently animals would eat it, or Sar Adashim, part of the lentils, the outside of the lentils, Mipnei Shu L'maychal Behemos. Even though you and I wouldn't eat this Seyar Shalafunim or Seyar Adashim, since it's Roy L'maychal Behema, it wouldn't be considered muksa either. Then the Mishnah says, a Sfog, a sponge, Im Yeshlo or Beis Achiza. If there's a handle to it, Mekanchin Bo, you'll have to wipe off the table because you're not going to squeeze it out. Because if you hold this, the next statement, Im Lav, if there is no handle, you have to hold on to the sponge itself when you start wiping the table. Im Mekanchin Bo, you can't clean the table because if you clean up a mess, inevitably, when you hold on to the sponge itself, you're going to squeeze out any of the liquid that was absorbed by it. But if there's a handle there, it's very possible you could still sweep and move and mop with the handle and not necessarily squeeze the sponge, and that would be allowed. So again, Sfog im Yeshlo or Beis Achiza, if there's a handle, you're allowed to go ahead and move the and wipe up the table. But if there is no handle, one would not be allowed to wipe up the table. That's all according to the Tanakhama. Chacham Omrim, Achlok is whether you have this gear or not, but Chacham Omrim, Bein Kach, regardless of whether or not there's a handle, or not a handle, nital, but Shabbos, a person is allowed to move this on Shabbos. It's considered a kli according to the Chachamim, and eino makabel tuma, it's not makabel tuma. So it is considered a kli. So it's talking about a situation whereby you're not using it. So in terms of using the actual sponge when there's liquid, that's depending whether or not there's a handle or not a handle. But let's say if you're not using it at all, the dry sponge on the side of my kitchen, I want to move it out of the way. Is a sponge by definition muksa or not muksa? And the Mishnah says here it's not considered muksa. You know, it is muksa, but you're allowed to move it. There's a debate whether it means, is a sponge a kli shel machtel heter or is a kli shel machtel iser? Rishonim argue. So some say it's a kli shemachta le'iser because the primary purpose is to wipe up a mess, and you could come to squeeze it out. It's a kli shemachta le'iser, but we know if you need tzarech le'gufo, tzarech le'makomo, you're allowed to move the item. So let's say I have a pen that's in my place here, or a hammer that's in my seat. I can move the hammer out of the way, even though the hammer is mukta, it's tzarech le'makomo. So if the sponge is in my way, it's on my chair, I'm allowed to move it, it's tzarech le'makomo. Others say no. That a sponge is actually a kli shelem lachto leheter. I'm allowed to use a beheter. Why could it be a heter? I could use a sponge to wipe something up without having to squeeze. Let's say there's some dust. I want to move the dust out of the way. That's not going to lead to schita. So there's a debate whether or not a dry sponge is a kli shelem lachto leiser or a kli shelem lachto leheter. But either way, there is a way to move it if there's a need. If it's tzorach makomo, you're certainly allowed to use it. But even though it's considered kli and not muksa when you need the place for it, the Mishnah does say it's not makabel tumah. Why is it not makabel tumah? We have a din. All kalim are makabel tumah, aren't they? So Rashi points out because the material of a sponge, whatever it's made of, Rashi explains, ain't a makabel tumah, de'eno lo kli'et, v'lo beged, v'lo sak, v'lo matechas. Only the items and materials mentioned in the psukim are subject to tumah. Plastic, for example, synthetic material is not subject to tumah. Even though it's a kli, I could have many plastic kalim, but it's not makabel tumah because plastic isn't mentioned in the Torah. So since sponge, whatever the material is made of, it's not wood, it's not cloth, it's not any of the other stuff, it's not metal. Therefore, though it's a kli legabe hilchos muksa and you're allowed to move it, it's not a kli with respect to being makabel tumah. Okay, let's begin the Gemara now. The Gemara says that Amar of Nachman anu ein lanu ela be shamai ki Rabbi Yehuda. Beis Hillel k'Rabbi Shimon. We have a Masara, this is mentioned in the beginning of Maseches Beitza, that although the Mishnah presents Beis Shammai like Rabbi Shimon, that there's no muksa, and Beis Hillel is like Rabbi Yehuda, that there is muksa, our Masara is the opposite. That really, Beis Shammai is machmir like Rabbi Yehuda, that there is muksa, and it's Beis Hillel that's mekel like Rabbi Shimon, that there is no muksa. That's how we understand it. So the Gemara then says, "Ma'avirin milfnei shulchan peirurin." A person can move away some crumbs, even though they're less than a kazayis. Even though you and I won't eat crumbs off the table, but an animal would. So therefore, it's not muksa. So the Gemara says that this mission is Messiah led Rabbi Yochanan. It supports Rabbi Yochanan. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan peirurin shein ba kehen kazayis aser la'avdin biyad. If you have some piece of bread, a person shouldn't just throw them in the garbage to get ruined and destroy them. There's a concept in halacha that the bread on the table, you should put them in bags and put them in the garbage nicely, but not to throw them in a way where they get ruined. So here's, well, we don't just get rid of bread, we use it. What's the raya? Rashi says, from the fact that it says, aser la'avdin biyad, midikatani ma'avirin biyadayim, v'lo zarakalu. It could say, take the bread off and just throw them away. Throw them in the garbage, throw them outside. But it says ma'avirim, which means to collect them with your hand, which means you have to show some level of respect to the bread, even if it's less than a kazayis, and not to la'avdan biyat. So Gemara then says, seyar shel afunim, which is some type of a material outside of beans of some sort, that is roy le'maychel adam, rather maychel behema, not maychel adam. So the Gemara says, money, who holds this way, that you're allowed to move it for a behema? It must be Rabbi Shimon, he deles lay muksa. Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold the muksa. He's the author of the Mishnah, and that's why you're allowed to move even that which is normally muksa for Adam, since it has a purpose for Behema. It's not really considered muksa, and that's Rabbi Shimon's Shita. So Gemara says, Ema, Seifa, look at the Seifa. The Seifa says, Safug im yeshla beis achiza makanchimba. If you have a sponge with a handle, you can move it. You could use it. You could clean with it. Vim lav, if there is no handle, ain makanchimba. You're not allowed to use it. Why not? Asan Rabbi Huda, that's Rabbi Huda, Damar Davar, Shemus Kavani's Asr. If I'm trying to clean up a mess with a sponge, I don't want the sponge to squeeze out the liquid. I want the liquid to remain absorbed. But they're concerned that Davar Shemus Kavani, I might end up squeezing the sponge too much, and then the water will come out and violate Schita. But that's Davar Shemus Kavani. That's not my Kavana. I certainly don't want that to happen. So why is it Asr, even without there being a handle? So it must be like Rabbi Huda, that Davar Shemus Kavani is actually Asr. So how could the ratio of the Mishnah be Shimon, Rabbi Shimon, who holds that there's no muksa, but the Seifa be Rabbi Huda, who holds that Rabbi Shimon's kavin is aser? No, not pirurin. You're cleaning up a liquid, a mess of water, oil, or wine, or something. So Gemara then says, no, that Baha, in this case of the sponge, afilu Rabbi Shimon Modi, even Rabbi Shimon will agree it's aser to use a sponge without a handle. Why? As we know already quite well, that this is an example that's inevitable. When you're using a sponge and cleaning up a mess, a spill of water, wine, oil, it's inevitable when you clean up, there will be some water and liquid that will come out. And since it's Psik Reisha, even Rabbi Shimon will be Machmir, that should be Aser. So the whole Mishnah is very consistent. The Reisha is Rabbi Shimon, that there's no Muksa, and the Seif is Rabbi Shimon, that even if Psik Reisha Dilo Yamos is also going to be Aser. Exactly. So then the Gemara says, "Hani garinin the tamri are maisa sharu the tatulai hol of a chazir agav iman." I'll read the statement. I'll go back and explain this. With the precisa aser. So what's going on here? Hani garinin. The Gemara says these pits of the tamri of a date are maisu, which Rashi explains are maisa are tamarim ra'im bad dates, which you and I wouldn't eat, but machilin tamarim le'atam lebehema. We serve the actual dates to animals. Hilkach agav imayu lebehema nami kaimu. So therefore, since the food themselves are designated for animals because they're bad for human consumption, so the pits also are fit for the animals. They go hand in hand. So agav ima through its mother, meaning through the date itself, the pits are also not muksa. You could serve them to the behemas, so you're allowed to move the pits because it's all roi for the behema. So back inside the Gemara again, hani garinim the tamri amaisa, the pits of these bad dates, sharu l'taltulne, you can move the pits. Hol, since v'chazi agav iman, since through the mother, in other words, through the date itself, it's right for the behema. The pits also right for the behema, not muksa. However, u'depresaisa, which Rashi says are good dates, tamarim tovim hem, and only fit and designated for human consumption, ein machin osan the behema. The pits, however, are not. So since the dates themselves were only designated for man, and the pits were only designated for animals, meaning weren't designated at all for anything, the pits actually are usher in the second case here, because the dates were not designated for behemoths. So the Gemara says, what would you do? You eat your dates, and you take your dates, and you put them on your table now. So you leave them all Shabbos. How do you move them? It's muksa now. After I finish my date, so I leave the pits there all day? So the Gemara says, no, what you could do is very simple. Shmuel metaltel lehu agav rifta. He would actually use his bread and scoop up the dates with his bread. He'd use the bread as some type of bread is a muksa, and indirectly moving the dates, using the bread as a medium, you can move and get rid of the pits. That's what Shmuel would suggest to do. So if you take a look at Tosfos, Tosfos at the bottom here, Shmuel metaltel agav rifta, avagav de krebi shimon svirle de shari lekaman beperek basra, even though later on we see that he permits Nevela shenisabla b'Shabbos, that if a nevela became an animal dropped dead on Shabbos, he doesn't think that's a problem. You're allowed to serve that to a behema, miu machmir haya, in this case, mishum dahava adam chashuv kabaye rava dila'el. Meaning, if Shmuel himself holds that if an animal drops dead on Shabbos, becomes a nevela, you're allowed to feed it to an animal. So if I take a pit out of a date, why can't I feed a pit to an animal on Shabbos also? Why would a pit be any more machmir than an animal that drops dead to give it to an animal? So Tosas, you're right, they're the same halachas, but this case, since we're talking about here, Machmir, Abaye v'Rava, who's Machmir for certain individuals, right? Adam Chashev doesn't take muksa lightly. So really, Mikra Din, just like a dropped animal that became a nevela, is mutter to feed to an animal, a pit is mutter to feed to an animal as well, but there's certain Adam Chashevim were Machmir on this. So the Maharshal asks a question, how in the world is Tosas able to connect the halachas of a pit to the halachas of a nevela? A nevela is an animal that you could have thought, well, yesterday they could drop dead. But a pit, he says, is considered a nolad. It's a brand new. He had a date, and now it's nolad. There's a pit. So nolad is much worse than that nevela. A nevela, an animal that was sick yesterday, could have anticipated it being a nevela today. It's going to die today. But a pit, he says, it's a different halacha. He wants to say that nevela is less muksa than a pit, because pit's nolad. That's what he suggests. But the Marsha says, back to the Marshal, he says, no. He says, Nevela is also considered Nolad. The animal was alive on Friday, and now it's dead. That's considered a new status, and that's Nolad, just like removing a pit from a date is also considered Nolad.
So pit is
exactly, right. Exactly, right. Yeah, so you have to use other ways to move it. Exactly.
Yeah,
it becomes a big problem, for sure.
Really?
So anyway, so yeah. So Shmuel says now, you're allowed to move it using a piece of bread. That's one etzah. The Gemara is going to give a few other etzahs how to move this. So the Gemara is going to go through a few other suggestions now. So the Gemara now quotes a simon, sharnam shafa simon. So these next few suggestions, how to get rid of pit on your table. So Shmuel tameh, that Shmuel osa adam kol tzarcha bepas. So Shmuel used bread in order to remove the pit. That was because he holds in general that you could use bread, even though some hold you shouldn't misuse bread. Bread's a chashiv food, and you shouldn't use it for anything other than eating itself. He was a very makel in how one uses bread, and you can use it actually to scoop up the pit. That was his general shita. Rabba, metaltele agav lekana demaya. He would actually put the pits on some type of water pitcher and carry it through that. So sefel shamayim, Rashi said, some pitcher of water. You'd have to use it indirectly as well. Rav Huna braid of Yeshua avilei kigraf sharei. So this is another etza. Graf sharei, where it's disgusting. If there's garbage there, you can't leave the garbage and smell and the odor in your house all day. You can move it. So here as well, he considers pits to be considered something disgusting and garbage, and therefore you're allowed to move it for that reason. So Amalei Rav Ashi says la meimar v'chi osin graf sharei lechatchila. So granted, if garbage happened to have come and it smells, it's in the way, you can move it. But to lechatchila make garbage, to eat dates and leave pits behind to make garbage, is that allowed? You can move that type of garbage? So that's so he says that you shouldn't move the fact that it's graf sharei. Rav Sheshes zariklu belishna. He would spit out with his tongue. He would have it in his mouth and spit with his tongue to the other side of the table, maybe to the garbage. Rav Papa zariklu achare hamita. He'd spit somehow behind the bed, behind the chair. He'd spit out over there. And Amru Allah, they said, Rabbi Zechariah ben Afkulis, Shaya Machzir Panav Achore Hamita Vizark, and he'd turn his head around and spit it behind the bed and in the chair and throw it out that way. So there are a few different ways, but what's clear from all this is a person should not directly move pits and shells off the table. Has to be some indirect way in doing so. Fine. Hajar Lach Nota Adam Esbuno. It's interesting, this last statement we just said in the name of Zechariah ben Afkulis, he also is the one, the famous one in the Gemara in the Gittin by the Churban Beis HaMikdash in Bar Kamsa Bar Kamsa Sugya, whereby he's the one, in terms of he wanted to send the animal and be matamum, and he's the one who's the Kohen Gadol. He says, no, we don't want to make people think you can be matamum in the Kachim. And the Gemara says, because Anvanusno shall be Zechariah ben Afkulis is what caused the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So in this Tosefta, it quotes this halacha of spitting out pits, it connects it somehow in a strange way to his humility that caused the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So it's very appropriate for this week, but it's very unclear what the connection is to spitting out pits to that of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. So there are a number of different mefarshim, none of them are very clear cut what it means, but Chassam Sofer says that somehow it relates to the Tosefta says Rabbi Zechariah wasn't concerned with the shita Beis Hillel or Beis Hillel Shammai, he just kind of spit it out because he had tremendous savlonus. He had a tremendous amount of patience for the pits. It didn't bother him the fact that pits were over here. I mean, if he didn't spit out over there, he left it on the table, he would have left it there. That wouldn't bother him so much. He has a tremendous amount of savlonus. So they say Chassam Sofer has a whole Shaki Atari where he says that when Bar Kamsa was invited to the meal, nobody wanted to keep him there. And that would have been fine. Everyone understood had he left the meal, that'd be okay. He was a big Russia. The understanding was he's a big Russia. Had they sent him out, no one would have been upset. No one would have made a big deal. But the fact was that everybody, Zechariah says, let him stay. He's a good guy. And then everyone else got upset that they let him stay. So the incredible patience of Rabbi Zechariah is what led to people getting upset, and that caused the whole fight, the whole Maisa. So sometimes having too much patience, sometimes having too much humility could cause a destruction. There are a few other explanations what the connection is, but that's at least according to Chassam Sofer. That ends the Perek Hanota. Let's begin now the 22nd Perek of Shabbos, Perek Chavis. The Mishnah begins, the Perek begins as follows. Chavis Shenishbura, you have a Chavis, some type of a barrel that breaks on Shabbos. So what do? Matil and Heimanu Mazon Shalosh Sudos, you're allowed to save up to three meals on Shabbos that's needed for the meal. And V'omer Lachem, you could tell others, Bo V'tzilu Lachem, come save for yourself another three meals. Each person gets three meals to save. Ubilvan, as long as you don't try to use some type of sponge to gather up some wine or something and collecting it, because you might come to squeeze down, as Rashi says, Ubilvan shlo yispog shlo yasim safog b'makom hayayin lachzor latifo b'kli gzer shema yischot. You shouldn't try to collect some wine in a sponge, lest you come to squeeze it. And furthermore, the Mishnah says, now that we're on the topic of schita, squeezing things out, the Mishnah says, ein sochtin es aperis in general. Nothing to do with saving any more wine that's breaking from a chavis, but it says in general, schita, a person may not squeeze peros, lahotzi man mashkin, you can't squeeze out fruit to generate fruit juice. Vim yatsu, if it does come out on me'atzman, on its own, asurin, so if you have oranges and then the orange juice begins to seep out on Shabbos, you can drink it. Even though you didn't squeeze it, you still can't get hana, because if you come to drink from it, you might say, oh, this orange juice is good, let me squeeze some orange juice out as well. So that's another gzera. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im la ochlin, if you had the fruit set aside to eat it. Like sometimes the fruits you have intention to squeeze out for juice. Sometimes you have them set aside to eat from them. So Rabbi Yehuda says it depends why you want the fruit. If you want the fruit, la ochlin, you want to eat oranges, not for juice, but oranges, then hayotim hen at mutter. Then any juice that does seep out, you're allowed to drink because you're not going to come to squeeze it. You want to eat the fruit. But if you set aside the oranges for the purposes of juices, then hayotim hen asa. Then you cannot drink any juice that oozed out because that might come to squeeze it. So Rabbi Yehuda's mechalik what the purpose was for setting aside the fruit. And then similar topic, chalos dvash, you have some honeycombs, shariskin me'erev Shabbos that you already pressed before Shabbos, and the honey is continuing to ooze out on Shabbos, v'yatzum yatzman, asur, and those are asur as well, because you might come to squeeze out the honey even further. And Rabbi Eliezer felt it was permitted to squeeze out. We'll see why in the Gemara. Just look at Rashi. Rashi says, chalos dvash me'achashim rusakin hadvash. So in the fact that you squeeze it, you press the honeycombs, Erev Shabbos, Zav Me'elav, the honey continues to flow on Shabbos, Mitoch HaShava, from the wax, the honeycomb, Ve'ein Derech L'Sochto, and people don't squeeze it. Hilkach Rebbe Elezer Matir, therefore Rebbe Elezer felt his mutter. As long as you started the process beforehand, the honey is going to just continue to flow without any more involvement of human pressing. V'chacham Osir, they felt it was Osir to take from the honeycomb, gezera atu she'ena merusakin dilma merasik lehu. Maybe it's not going to be pressed well, or maybe a different situation where you didn't press it at all, you might come to take it. This actually comes up. People like to give gifts, Rosh Hashanah, some of these honeycombs, like natural honeycombs, and this is a big shaila. According to Chachamim, you really can't use it on Shabbos. It has to be squeezed out, everything out before Shabbos, but on Shabbos itself, it's a big, big problem. Now, there's an interesting discussion within Rashi. Rashi in two different places gives indications whether or not schita is a tolda of dash or whether it's simply it's an av of dash. At one point he calls schita an av in a place early in the Masechta, and here he actually calls schita a tolda of dash. So the Eglei Tal tries to deal with it, address where the differences are, but he says really Rashi thinks schita is a tolda of dash, and when he calls it an av, he didn't really mean av, it's lav dafka, it's really a tolda of dash. But the Shulchan Aruch Rav, he explains that no. He thinks that when you're using a kli in order to squeeze something, so then schita becomes a av. But if you're using your hand, that's a tolda. That's the distinction how the Shulchan Aruch Harav thinks. Okay, let's continue the Gemara now. The Gemara says as follows. Tana. Lo yispog b'yayin, a person should not use a sponge to collect wine. V'lo yitpach b'shemen. He also shouldn't use it with oil. What does it mean, yitpach? If you look at Rashi, yitpach means, the first Rashi on the Gemara, machnis bo kapo, you shouldn't scoop up your hand, some oil in your hand, and then you have to, v'ashemen nidbach bo, and the oil kind of sticks to you, and then what you do is, mekanecho b'sfasa kli, then you kind of scrape off the oil from your hand, it falls into the hand. That's usher to do so on Shabbos. Why is it usher? The Gemara says, and Rashi points out here, because kederach shu osu b'chol. That's over the d'chol. There's certain things we don't do on Shabbos, even though there's no isser involved, no malach involved. It's something we do during the chol. That to scoop up oil with your hand and scrape it on the top of the kli, that they felt was a uvda d'chol. So you shouldn't squeeze up wine because of a real malacha, and you shouldn't scoop up the oil with your hand. That's an uvda d'chol. So Gemara then says, Tani Rabbanan, the Braisa teaches us that nispazru lo peros b'chatzer. Let's say your fruit dispersed, they spread out, they fall, a basket of apples fall, and they're all dispersed throughout your courtyard. Malaket al-yad al-yad v'ochel. A person could collect one by one and eat them as he picks them up, but what he can't do is, avalo lo tocha sal, he can't start collecting the apples in a basket. It looks like an uvda d'chol, like you're going apple picking, you put things in the basket. A person shouldn't collect apples on Shabbos in a basket. V'lo lo tocha kupa, nor in a box. Shlo yaseh kederach shu osa b'chol. In order that person not do an uvda d'chol, that's considered collecting. Now this would not be ma'amir. Ma'amir is one of the 39 malachos. Ma'amir is collecting fruit, things that grow from the ground on Shabbos. That's only true if you're collecting it for the very first time, where, you know, apples fell from the tree, or perhaps some, you cut the wheat and it's been hanging on the ground a little bit, and you're collecting everything. That would be ma'amir. But here, the fruits were already removed from the trees, and they were in your house, and you dropped everything. That would not be a violation of ma'amir, but collecting the fruits would only be a violation of uvda d'chol. So then the Gemara says, "Ein sochlenes aperos." A person may not squeeze fruits on Shabbos. So Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Modaya Rebbe Yehuda, Rebbe Yehuda, who is mechalik between why you have the fruit set aside, whether it's for food or drink, he agrees to Chachamim, Bezesim Vavanim. He agrees by Zaysim Avanim, there are no distinctions. We don't say Imla Ochan, if you had the olives and grapes for eating, then any of the Mashkim Shemad Shezavu are Mutter. He agrees by olives and grapes, any grape juice or olive oil that came out would be Aser, like Chachamim, my time, why? Kevan, de l'schita ninu, yav daitan. Since Kimat everyone, most oil, most olives and most grapes in this world are used for the juices, for the olive oils and for the wine. Therefore, since it's primarily used for schita, any drink that comes out, any juice that comes out from it, would be asr, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. If you look at Rashi, Rashi just explains here that mod de Rabbi Yehuda bezesim, the afagav dechnisan l'ochon, even though you yourself maybe collected the olives to eat from them, hayot mehem asr, that which oozes out would be asr, dechemen the ruban the schita, since most olives and most oil and grapes are meant to be squeezed, kaima, ki asr lide mashke, when a person does end up drinking and have some liquid, yavdaite, lemeve nichalek, b'hachi, oh, that's not too bad, I like the olive oil, I like the grape juice, and therefore he'll agree that any type of grape juice or olive oil would be asr to benefit from on Shabbos that was squeezed out on Shabbos. However, Ula Amar, the Gemara says, Ula Amar, Rav Chaluk, Hayar Rabbi Yehuda, Af, B'zeisim Vanavim, he felt that Rabbi Yehuda even argued by Zeisim Vavanim, and there would be a chilik of whether or not you collected the olives and grapes for eating or a drink. If you collected it for eating, then you would be able to benefit from any of the olive oil or wine that oozed out. Hari Paskin, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Halacha, Rabbi Yehuda, B'shar Peros, Vein Halacha, Rabbi Yehuda, B'zeisim Vavanim. In other words, we do accept Rabbi Yehuda that there's a chilik of Ochlin versus Mashkim by other fruits, but with respect to olives and grapes, we do not hold like him. There is no chilek. In other words, we hold like Chachamim, that Rabbi Yehuda agrees to Chachamim, that all olives and all grapes, any of the juice that comes out, would be ours usher, even if you did collect them for the purpose of eating. So we see we're more machmir by olives and grapes. Now, very halach l'maisa, that it's brought down Rabbi Rubiat's book, talks about when cutting grapes on Shabbos, so when you want to give a grape to a child, so you don't want to give a whole grape, it's very dangerous. You cut them in pieces. Now, the problem is when you cut them in pieces, you're generating juice. That's grape juice now. So that's a form of schita, and that would be nichale. So he says what you should do if you're going to cut grapes on Shabbos, in order to avoid any form of schita, you need two things. One thing is you need to put it on a napkin. This way, any juice that comes out goes directly, it gets absorbed in the napkin. This way, there's no juice that's edible. And number two is, he says, you should use a knife that's serrated, whereby you go back and forth slowly, as opposed to putting pressure on something. Putting pressure on the grape is going to generate more juice. You go back and forth with a serrated knife, it's not going to cause as much juice, and therefore you would avoid any issues of schita, because we're very, very machmir when it comes to grapes on Shabbos. So Gemara now says, after establishing that we have a chilik of bein ochlin lemashkim legabe sharperos, but with respect to grapes and olives themselves, we said that you can have, there is no such chilik. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabba, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Mo dehaya Rabbi Yehuda, lechachamim. Rabbi Yehuda agreed to chachamim, bezeisim vavanim, by olives and grapes, that any mashkim sheyotze are usher on Shabbos. And the flip side is also true. Mo dem chachamim le Rabbi Yehuda, b'shar peyos. They agreed to Rabbi Yehuda, by other fruits, that there is a chilek between ochlin and mashkin. In other words, if the fruit of other fruits, let's say oranges, were set aside for mashkim, so the mashkim sheyatsu would be usher. If the oranges were set aside for ochlin, then mashkim shezavu would be mutter. So Rabbi Yehuda agrees to chachamim, chacham agrees to Rabbi Yehuda. So they're saying the same thing. So when do they argue then, the Gemara says? So amalei Rabbi Yirmiyah, le Rabbi Abba, el b'may pli, what's the machlokis? If chacham agreed to Rabbi Yehuda in the case of sharperos, Rabbi Yehuda agreed to Chachamim by Anavim Vezesim, so they're always in agreement. There's no, what area are they arguing on? So the Gemara says, Amrle Lechi Tishkach, when you go find it, let me know. So Amr of Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Mestavra Betusim Rimonim Pligi. It makes sense. They argue about a very narrow area of strawberries and pomegranates. The Tanya. The Baisa says, Zesim Shemashach Bem Shemen Vanavim. Zeisim shemashach behem shemen, v'anavim shemashach behem yain. If you have olives that olive oil came from, or grapes and grape juice wine came from, v'chnisin, and you gather them together, lo'ochlam, to eat from it, bein l'mashkin sheyotzim behem asr. Whether or not you brought them to eat, bein l'mashkin, they're asr to benefit. As you said before, that everyone's machmir by grapes and olives, regardless of why you gather them together, regardless of why you put them aside, you cannot benefit from the drink. So that's clear. Then the Baruch says, Tusim, when it comes to strawberries, sometimes I'm not sure it's only strawberries or all types of berries. Tusim, shemashach ben mayim, if you have some of the water, some of the fruit juice, some of the berry juice that came out from it. and Rimonim, Shemashach Mehem Yain, and the wine that came from the pomegranate juice, these two cases, these categories, V'chnisen La'ochlin, if you had collected the pomegranates and the berries for the purpose of eating it, so then the Mayim and Yain that Yatsu, Hayotzimem is actually Mutter. If, however, L'mashkin U'lestam Hayotzimem Aser Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, if, however, you collected them for drinking or stam, or you didn't have any intention, you just wanted to collect pomegranates and figure out why some point down the line, then Rabbi Yehuda says it would be aser to benefit from any of the mayim shiyatzimhem. Chachamim Omrim, they argue by the Tusim V'Rimon, and they say, no, bein la'ochen, bein la'mashkin, hayotzimhem aser. They think even if you did collect the Tusim V'Rimonim for the purposes of eating, even there, the Yotze, the Mashim Shiyotzimhem would be Aser. So that is the Machlokas between the two of them. You just look at Rashi. Rashi just says here, to put this all together, Rashi says, Chachamim Omrim, Hadinakat Rav Nachman Elisha de Mistavra, V'lo Amar Behedya de Betusim V'Rimonim Pligi. Right? Rav Nachman said Mistavra. He says, this is logical to say. But he goes on to quote a Brisa. Brisa is a proof, not just a logical statement. So Rashi asks, how come Rav Nachman says this as a mistavra, as a logical statement, and doesn't say as it's a clear statement? Mishum de'iklameimar, there's room to say, pligi betusim v'rimonim v'hu adin l'sharperis. There's room to interpret the Brisa to say, although the Brisa gave the example that they're arguing about tusim v'rimonim, that could have been just two examples, and it could have extended itself also to sharperis. Maybe they argue about sharperis as well. Uliyodiyacha koch de'bihuda, just to show you how far Behuda is willing to go. The Mishum Brisa to the Kama, and there's a Brisa later on, we'll ignore that. But either way, it's not so clear from the Brisa because it doesn't address Shar Peiros in the Brisa. It might be just by Tusim V'Rimonim and also exist by Peiros. So that's why Rav Nachman only called this a Mistavra. He couldn't say it's a Mefurish Brisa. We're going to stop here a little early because tomorrow's daf is a little bit short, and this next piece really dips into the next daf. So we'll stop here. Mirza Hashem, we'll continue tomorrow.